Versa Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. The husband and wife who shot 14 people to death at a California holiday party Thursday had 12 pipe bombs, bomb-making materials, and thousands of rounds of ammunition in their apartment. Here is Police Chief Jared Bergman.
We did locate the one pipe bomb. There was actually three pipe bombs combined into one that had a remote control car type remote control device that appears to have not have worked in this case. There were also four high-capacity 223 rifle magazines that were dropped by the suspects and left in there as evidence that have been recovered.
Syed Rizwan Farouk and his wife Tashfeen Malik were killed in a shootout with police near the handicap training center where they shot and killed 14 people and wounded 21. South Africa's Supreme Court of Appeal has convicted double amputee athlete Oscar Pistorius of murder, overturning his earlier conviction of culpable homicide, a less serious charge.
The accused conviction and sentence on count one are set aside and replaced with the following. Guilty of murder, with the accused having had criminal intent in the form of dolus eventualis.
The court announced its ruling Thursday in the case of the Olympic star, who was convicted last year of the 2013 shooting death of his girlfriend, Reva Steenkamp. U.S. Secretary of Defense Ashton Carter says women soldiers will be able to drive tanks and fire mortars in the near future.
This means that as long as they qualify and meet the standards, women will now be able to contribute to our mission in ways they could not before.
The Pentagon is planning to open all combat positions to women beginning in the new year. Currently, women are prohibited only from combat jobs, about 10% of military occupations. This is VOA News. The head of the U.S. Central Bank told Congress Thursday a growing economy is boosting employment and rising toward a healthier rate of inflation. Federal Reserve Chairman Janet Yellen said the economy is moving toward the Fed's 2% inflation rate. She said this seems to indicate that a rate hike is coming unless economic indicators take a sharp turn for the worst. Fed officials have been considering an interest rate increase for a long time. The U.S. House of Representatives has adjourned until next week without reaching an agreement on a government spending bill. A spending measure has to be passed by both the House and the Senate by December 11th to avoid a partial government shutdown. The U.S. Senate has voted to repeal major portions of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. The Republican-led chamber also defeated an amendment proposed by Democrats to restrict U.S. gun sales. That proposal came in the aftermath of Wednesday's mass shooting in San Bernardino, California. The Senate also voted to withhold federal funds from abortion provider Planned Parenthood. A presidential veto is promised. A former Russian tank commander turned Taliban militant will spend the rest of his life in prison for a failed attack against U.S. and Afghan forces in 2009. Irak Ilgiz Hamidulin was sentenced in Washington Thursday to a life term plus 30 years. A Turkish official says the foreign ministers of Turkey and Russia met Thursday on the sidelines of a Europe security meeting. It was the first high-level bilateral talks since Turkey downed a Russian jet fighter late last month. British fighter jets have carried out their first airstrikes in Syria, targeting the Islamic State, following a vote in Parliament. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Just hours after military action was approved, four British Tornado jets took off from their base in Cyprus to attack Islamic State targets in Syria. The first bombs were dropped on the Omar oil refineries in the east that it's believed were used to fund the terror group. Britain has sent eight further jets to its base in Cyprus as the bombing campaign intensifies. Henry Ridgewell, London.
The corruption scandal involving football's world governing body FIFA has widened. On Thursday, the U.S. Justice Department named 16 additional FIFA officials indicted for racketeering, wire fraud, and money laundering conspiracies, as well as corruption. The latest indictments bring the total number of individuals and entities charged to date to 41. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon urged negotiators at the climate change talks in Paris to adopt a universal agreement to begin alleviating the effects of global warming. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, December 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The China-Africa Economic Forum begins today in Johannesburg, South Africa.
The real story for me is not so much the supply side, i.e. the supply side of capital coming out of China, but it's more the demand side for resources going into China, which has really underpinned African growth.
Martin Davis is the Managing Director of Emerging Markets and Africa at Deloitte Frontier Advisory. African diaspora want more African refugees in the United States. Zimbabwe's First Lady calls for patriotism despite difficult economic times. And some Tanzanians say they like what their new president is doing about corruption.
The president, what he's doing maverick, right? They say that if they had such a president before, Tanzania would have been much higher in the development.
That's veteran Tanzanian journalist Timothy Kahoho. A former South Sudanese lost boy is now a diplomat with the U.S. State Department, and will feature the international makeup of Brooklyn's Long Island University basketball team. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The China Economic Forum begins today in Johannesburg, South Africa. It's being attended by Chinese President Xi Jinping. VOA's Anita Powell reports.
How much does Africa mean to China? To hear South Africa's president say it, a lot.
We have just witnessed the signing of 26 agreements that are worth 94 billion rand.
That's $6.5 billion in deals with South Africa alone. And it's big numbers like that that have come to dominate discussions about China-Africa relations. In one of 10 agreements signed Wednesday in Zimbabwe, China dropped $1.2 billion for a power project. And Nigeria's president plans to ask China in coming days for another $20 billion for rail and power projects. But China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi said Thursday in South Africa's capital that the relationship is about much more than money, and that President Xi is much more than just a gift giver for African leaders. China-Africa cooperation, he said, through an interpreter, is about making sure that this world will be fairer, more secure, and more inclusive. To that end, the Chinese government has recently taken a new tack in Africa, pledging military aid to the African Union. China sent peacekeepers to northern Mali in 2013 and to South Sudan this year. And China recently announced plans to build a logistical navy base in the tiny East African nation of Djibouti. Analyst Martin Davis, Managing Director of Emerging Markets and Africa at Deloitte Frontier Advisory, says Africa-China relations are evolving. He describes it as China-Africa 3.0. In the 1960s, he explained, China-Africa relations were all about ideology, as Africa was caught in a capitalist-communist tug-of-war. In the 90s, that evolved into a Chinese binge on African commodities. What's changed, he said, is that commodity prices are down. China's economy has also slowed, and the nation has accordingly slowed down its investment in Africa by as much as 40%, according to official figures.
How will China's engagement with the continent, considering the less of resource-intensive growth model of China's own economy, it's a very different environment. So I'm quite interested to see how this will play out and how Chinese state capital is viewing the continent and how the continent responds to this going forward.
The coming talks between Chinese officials and African leaders are crucial to determining what's next, he says. That's happening this week as the China-Africa Forum begins Friday in Johannesburg. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
It appears Africa is seeing the emergence of a few breed of leaders who could finally be the face of the continent's overdue yearning for a dent in the fight against corruption. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has launched an anti-corruption war, although his critics say it's colored by politics. Optimism is high in Tanzania, where new President John Magufuli has taken steps to cut government waste and make civil servants do their work. Timothy Kahoho is a veteran Tanzanian journalist with the weekly East African magazine. He says many Tanzanians so far approved of President Magufuli's stance against corruption.
Well, the president, what he's doing maverick, right? Because first he started to visit the harbor, where he found that most of the officials there used the harbor to benefit themselves rather than collecting taxes for the imports and exports for the benefit of Tanzania.
What do you think the ordinary Tanzanian, what do they think about what the president is doing?
Well, the president, what he's doing mavras, right? They say that if they had such a president before, Tanzania would have been much higher in the development, because he found he has managed to get those people who are making the government lack money for the development of the country. So I think they are happy with the president. If he goes with that speed, Tanzania is going to be a very wealthy country in East Africa.
The president, he's also told government people who plan to have conferences and workshops to not have those conferences in expensive or luxurious hotels to be able to save money.
You find that such people like the Commissioner General of TRA, they were just charging the money from the businessmen, but the money which we are getting were not put in the treasury. They were using themselves or building their own houses. They found that one of them was having 73 houses, luxury houses in Dar es Salaam, when his salary was not enough to build those houses.
So what do you think the president might do again? Will he continue to visit or announce to other places?
Well, yesterday, during the day, I heard that he had contacted each of them to how they can return back those money to the government so that the money can be used for the development of the country, and then those can be set free. If they fail to return that money, they are going to be taken to the court.
Timothy Kahoho is a veteran Tanzanian journalist with the weekly East Africa magazine. He was speaking with me from the capital, Dar es Salaam. Zimbabwe's First Lady, Grace Mugabe, yesterday urged Zimbabweans to cherish their independence and the peace that she said is currently prevailing in the country despite the hardships that they are facing in their daily lives. Reporter Toraya Shava of the Zimbabwe program has details from Harare.
Addressing thousands of people at Matisa Growth Point in Matabeleland South, Mrs. Mugabe said Zimbabweans should cherish the independence and unity brought about by nationalists like the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo, saying doing so would ensure that his soul rests in peace. The First Lady acknowledged that as a result of the economic crisis that the country is facing, many people are struggling, but said this should not make them forget the country's liberation history.
We really value the unity that was bequeathed to us by our father, the late Vice President Joshua Nkomo. He sacrificed a lot for all of us, and if we want his soul to rest in peace, we must maintain the unity.
The First Lady took her time explaining the Zim Asset program, which she said was meant to counter sanctions that she said were imposed on Zimbabwe by Western countries, adding that it will help pull the country out of the current mess. While asserting that President Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party are people at heart, Mrs. Mugabe also attacked the MDCT leader, Morgan Tsvangirai, accusing him of bringing suffering to the majority through asking Western countries to impose sanctions against Zimbabwe. She also took a swipe against some Western NGOs, which she accused of taking advantage of food insecurity in areas like Matabeleland South and using food aid as a way of trying to effect regime change.
I know that there are many NGOs who come here to give you food aid, but I say to you, if you see someone coming to you year in, year out to help you with food and not doing anything to enable you to feed yourself, that person is not your friend. They are not helping you at all. I know they normally increase their aid during election time, and they will be telling you that your leaders don't care about you. They will be telling you to vote your true leaders out of power so that they can be replaced by Western stooges.
But Mrs. Mugabe herself said she had brought a consignment of food and other household items as, quote, a show of her love for the people. Reporting from Mapisa and Matabeleland South, this is Taurai Shala.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today's Friday, December 4th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's give a shout out to listeners on all our VOA affiliates around Africa. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. The United States says it will significantly increase the number of refugees it accepts from around the world over the next couple of years. While the recent focus has been on Syrian refugees, members of the U.S. African diaspora hope African refugees will also benefit from the pledge. But there is one hurdle that keeps Africans in the U.S. from speaking as one voice. Elizabeth Lee reports from Los Angeles.
On the edge of downtown Los Angeles, a group of people, mainly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, gather at the African First Community Church of Southern California once a week for a little piece of home. About one-third of them arrived in the U.S. as refugees. Camille Tutu, founder of Africa New Day, says applying to the U.S. under refugee status is not an easy process.
Sometimes it's very difficult, and it's a very long process, and we never know when you start the process when it's going to actually end up in, the person actually coming to the States.
On this Sunday, Tutu talks to the congregation the work he's been doing to help the Congolese people back home in a country plagued by war and violence.
There are militia groups all over the eastern part of Congo. But again, when I say militia, people don't understand. Let me say there are ISIS all over, and then people will understand. If I say there are Al-Qaeda and Taliban all over, then people will understand. But this has been going on for the past 25 years.
Tutu's homeland is not the only African country in turmoil, says the church's pastor, Kasirika Kasomo.
The whole country is in, continent, I wanted to say, is in big turmoil. So when we are seeing Africans really running for their lives, I don't know why many times the international community closes its eye.
The victims are those who are, who are regular people. You know, they can't work in their country. They have been jailed. They have been tortured.
Ethiopian native Saba Maskal has been a persistent voice for African refugees. She's been helping them navigate life in the U.S. for almost 35 years.
I advocate that African refugees should be given an opportunity to come to the United States.
In 2015, about one-third of all refugees who arrive in the U.S. came from Africa. Talk show host and magazine editor Pamela Anchang, who's originally from Cameroon, hopes more Africans will be able to come as the U.S. increases the numbers of accepted refugees over the next few years.
People are getting killed, getting slaughtered, even in my own country, in the north. Boko Haram has infiltrated and has caused a lot of havoc. But it just seems to be that the emphasis is more on the European crisis, and the Africans are feeling neglected. So I think we as Africans ought to speak up.
Anchang hopes the plight of African refugees will get more attention through her TV shows and magazine about immigrants and the African diaspora. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
A former South Sudanese lost boy is settling into his new job with the U.S. State Department as a Foreign Service officer. Guy Nguyen York says he is both humble and excited to embark on his new journey to Venezuela. Ayen Bior of VOA South Sudan in Focus program reports.
Nyok dreamed of becoming a public servant as a young boy growing up in Kenya's Kakuma refugee camp. At just 29 years old, he's defied many odds. Nyok was forced to flee his homeland during the Second Sudanese Civil War and eventually made his way to Kakuma refugee camp. Later, he was sent to the United States along with thousands of other lost boys. Today, he works in one of the highest diplomatic missions in the world. He says growing up in a refugee camp didn't stop him from pursuing his goals.
I knew that I wanted to be many things, and I tried to keep a good balance on my academic performance because I I wanted to open up opportunities for me to be able to do anything that I would really decide to do.
Nyok and his brother resettled with a family living in the U.S. East Coast state of Virginia in September 2001. Within 4 years, he finished his high school classes with a perfect 4.0 grade point average, which is the equivalent of receiving all A's in every class. He says receiving perfect scores helped him enroll in a good university. Nyok was accepted into the Virginia Commonwealth University, where he studied international relations and economics. Upon completing his studies in 2010, he was accepted into graduate school at the University of Illinois, where he received a master's in economics. Nyok says during this time, he couldn't help but reflect on his early childhood experience at the Kakuma refugee camp.
Where I live at the refugee camp, there were many refugees from many Eastern African countries. So I was always concerned about the conflict that happened in many countries and how the international system, how other countries, you know, can help contribute to a solution.
Nyok says while growing up, his role models were the humanitarian workers and diplomats who came to take care of them in the refugee camp. He says from a very early age, he knew he wanted to be exactly like them.
And I felt that the treatment that they gave me and they gave to the other refugees in the refugee camp was something that really captivated me. I really admire the respect and dignity that they showed, you know, the people that were in such difficult situation.
Nyok says refugees around the world should be treated with nothing less than the same respect that he and his family received in Kenya. He says he is looking forward to helping the people of Venezuela. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
When physician James Naismith invented basketball in 1891, he had no idea of the international impact it would have. Today, basketball is a worldwide sport, and some of the greatest players play on college and professional teams in the United States. Brooklyn's Long Island University has three African players as part of its international squad. VOA's Bernard Schussman reports from New York.
The team is the Blackbirds. They play in the Northeast Conference that has 21 foreign-born players, five of them at LIU. 20-year-old Nura Zana is from Nigeria. His goal is to play in the National Basketball Association, the top basketball league in the world. But Zana knows there's more to basketball than playing the game.
Hopefully, you know, if I can get a job in the NBA, like an international department job, so you know we can help basketball more global, you know, in Africa, and promote the game more in Africa, and you know, help more kids.
One of his teammates is Glenn Fidanga. This 21-year-old college junior is from the Central African Republic.
Like a lot of kids in Africa, they're dreaming to come here, but they're not lucky enough to get a chance to come. But I was one of the lucky ones to get a chance to come to the United States.
One of the youngest players on the team is 18-year-old Ganlandu Cisse. He's from Senegal. His goal is to play professionally in Europe. Cisse is learning to be independent.
Like college is a lot of different new thing. Like you have to manage your time, your school, your work, basketball court. I mean, it's a lot of work. So I'm handling it right now.
Jack Perry has been LIU's head coach for 4 years. He believes strongly in gathering information about possible basketball recruits, no matter where they're from.
Obviously, you want to get a kid that's athletic, that has potential on the basketball court. But we also look at other things, how they handle adversity. You know, are they constantly whining and complaining or making excuses, that kind of stuff on the court? You know, how do they handle situations with their parents, teachers, and things like that?
Elmar Fredrickson, top of the key, works at the
three out of the last 5 years, the Blackbirds have been champions of their conference. Perry believes his international team is on track to achieve some of the same glory that LIU has enjoyed in its past basketball history.
He's going to fire it now for three. Good!
Bernard Schussman, VOA News, Brooklyn, New York.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Uganda edged past hosts Ethiopia 5-3 in a post-match penalty shootout after their 0-0 stalemate in the semifinals at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's CECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Addis Ababa on Thursday. In a similar vein, Rwanda edged Sudan 4-2 in a penalty shootout following their 1-1 draw. Tomorrow, Saturday, Sudan and Ethiopia play for the bronze medal before Rwanda and Uganda clash in the final. Meanwhile, hosts Senegal play Zambia in Dakar as South Africa engage Tunisia in Mboa, some 70 kilometers southeast of Dakar, at the Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Egypt play Mali in Mboa, while Algeria and Nigeria clash in Dakar. In Switzerland, Libya is the most improved men's national team in the world, while Liberia has slipped by the widest margin in the world, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich on Thursday. African champions Ivory Coast rank 19th and is the continent's highest placed team. Algeria is 28th, Ghana 33rd, Cape Verde Islands 39th, Tunisia 40th, Senegal 44th, Republic of Congo 48th, Guinea 50th, Egypt 57th, and Cameroon 59th. Meanwhile, Sudan host Libya in the first leg of the preliminaries of the Futsal Africa Nations Cup qualifiers, the Confederation of African Football revealed in Cairo, Egypt. Zambia engage Equatorial Guinea, Cameroon play Angola, Tunisia face Nigeria, Madagascar engage Mozambique, and Ivory Coast play Morocco. According to the draws, Egypt get a bye to the next round. The contest starts on Sunday. In basketball, Angolan defending champions Inter Club overpowered Kenya's United States International University 87-31 at the Africa Women's Basketball Club Championships in Luanda, Angola on Thursday. Angola's Primero de Agosto outplayed Nigeria's Dolphins 81-16. In rugby, South Africa take on Samoa as Kenya face Australia as the 2015-2016 IRB Sevens Rugby Series starts in Dubai, United Arab Emirates today, Friday. In athletics, Kenya's world marathon record holder Dennis Kimeto, former world record holder Patrick Makau, and Emmanuel Mutai are the draw card at the Fukuoka Marathon in Japan on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Renewed fighting was reported in central Somalia on Thursday, a day after the leaders of the rival Puntland and Galmudug administrations signed a peace deal. A VOA reporter in the town of Galkayo in the central Somali region of Mundu said the fighting began early Thursday with heavy gunfire and continued with both sides using mortars. At least 10 people were killed and more than 30 others wounded, according to medical officials. Galkayo is the provincial capital of the divided Mondu region. The northern part is controlled by Puntland region state, while the south is held by Galmudug regional state. Disputed land in the city has created tensions over control of the town. Last week, fighting between forces loyal to both sides left 30 people dead. That's it for this Friday, December 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Let's Talk, dieting after the holidays. Is this the New Year resolution for many? Join host Sandeep Shomari and his guests discussing dieting after the holidays. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa. Democracy wins with a smooth transition of power in Burkina Faso. President-elect Roch Marc Christian Kabore soundly defeated the opposition in the first free and competitive vote since independence. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss Burkina Faso's future under the new leadership of Kabore.
VOAAfrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news,